This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. The furious protests in Ferguson, Missouri that have been raging on for days are something most Bostonians are watching from afar. But Tufts University professor Peniel Joseph has been thinking deeply about why those protests are happening a half century after the civil rights movement was supposed to have broken so much ground for Black Americans. Joseph points out that even though veteran civil rights leaders like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton have been present at many of the demonstrations in Ferguson, that hasn't calmed the angry crowds. Here was Reverend Jackson in Ferguson Friday night calling for peace.
No one wants to see self-destructive riots because there's no future in riots. I think that aggressive, nonviolent demands will be significant.
Yet more violence broke out over the weekend. And Peniel Joseph says that's evidence of a wide and deep gulf between Black youth today and the old guard Black leaders of the 1960s. We spoke with him earlier today about his belief that Ferguson has exposed a civil rights generational divide. One of your key points here is that this seems to be a leaderless protest. There's really no leader to sort of corral. So talk to me about that leaderlessness.
I think at the ground level, there are local leaders. I think the voices that have been leaderless are those who have committed acts of violence. But they're not just looters. They're not just people who are wanting to cause chaos. They actually feel angry about both Michael Brown, and Michael Brown is really the match that started this, but they feel angry about racial segregation in Ferguson and really deep poverty there. 22% of the people live in poverty. It's a rigidly segregated city, formerly predominantly white. Now it's part of the ring of suburbs and exurbs in St. Louis and other cities. It's 12 miles away from St. Louis that have an influx of a Black population, yet white political leaders.
And given that socioeconomic and political situation and how long these protests have been going on in Ferguson, would you have expected a leader to emerge?
In terms of local civil rights leadership, they have been effective in terms of organizing nonviolent protests. What you haven't had is a leader who's voicing basically the political anger and rage of Black youth and millennial youth. And there's actually some white youth and Latino youth who've come out on the streets as well. So what you haven't had is that figure. And in the 60s, you had figures, whether it's Stokely Carmichael or the Black Panthers or on the white side, Tom Hayden and anti-war demonstrators who were sort of the symbols of that political protest. Here in our current time, you don't have young people. Certainly, you've got Jesse Jackson, you have Al Sharpton, but you don't have a younger, and I mean by younger, I mean, you know, under 30.
Do you think they even want a leader? If someone were to emerge, is this a group of people that would rally around someone in a leadership position?
I think if it's somebody who's from their communities, if it's somebody who actually, has lived and worked and experienced what they've experienced and can get that kind of access. But I think that's very difficult for that kind of person to get access, whether it's to NPR or MSNBC or mainstream media. Because remember, we've seen in the on-the-spot interviews, not everyone's going to be as articulate as the Black articulate folks who everyone loves and says, that young woman or young man speaks so well. They're coming from a whole different world. So is that palatable for all of us in the mainstream? So I think it's going to be difficult from that perspective because we may not like what we hear and we may say, well, this person's too irresponsible to be a leader, and that diffuses the whole point of dialogue.
We did see one local person emerge a bit as a leader, maybe the most person most resembling a leader, and that's the Missouri Highway Patrol Captain Ron Johnson, who is Black and who really has been a voice of calm, even though he is on the law enforcement side. What does it tell you that someone like that has basically taken a sort of leadership mantle?
Well, I think that Ron Johnson did perform, admirably. But you remember, Ron Johnson was part of the authorities there, and he was trying to contain the violence. So he certainly treated the Black folks with respect, and even though he's not from that community, he treated them as if he was part of that community. I think one of the biggest problems that we've seen in Ferguson is this idea of the impact of racial segregation, because law enforcement in Ferguson did not feel as if the people they were patrolling were part of their community, which is why they were pointing live ammo at black citizens in Ferguson. You don't do that to people you go to church with and you congregate with and you feel they're friends, because some of those people might be, they have children who are friends with your children. You only do that when you think you're in Iraq, you think you're in Fallujah.
I want to go back to Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. If they, could they be saying something differently, having a different message, spreading their message somewhere else, like, for example, on Twitter, if they changed their approach, could they be more effective?
Well, I think they're doing the best that they can. I mean, certainly Reverend Sharpton is connected with many, many different communities, including young people all across the country. I just think that they don't have the resources to amplify that message. And also, some people are not going to be receptive to that message. I think that we need a paradigm shift in the age of Obama, because we've been telling everyone that if you go to college and if you do the right thing, you're going to get access. But when you think about the numbers belie that.
Part of the challenge seems to be that the young black population in particular doesn't just feel disconnected from, let's call it, the white power structure, but they also feel no connection, it seems, to the social organizations that blacks would turn to in the past. And there did used to be that infrastructure of organizations and clergy that represented the black community. Do you feel like that infrastructure has not kept up with the times? Has it kind of crumbled?
Well, I mean, it hasn't crumbled, Sasha, but what I will say is that those who are living in real endemic poverty, like you see in Ferguson, don't have access to those institutions. So certainly the social welfare institutions, the church institutions, they still exist, but they're on a limited level, and they're not getting to certain people. And this is not just in Ferguson. This is in Boston. This is violence in Chicago. This is really a national problem.
Peniel, in your piece for The Root, you have a line that says that these young black people find the lessons of the civil rights era increasingly hard to comprehend. And by the lessons, do you mean they were told basically obey the rules, behave, go to school, and things will work out, and they feel that hasn't been the case?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And they were also told that segregation was overcome. They were told that, we were all existing in a bad dream of racial inequality, and that their parents and grandparents fought and died and struggled so they could have more access. And when they open up their eyes every day, they're seeing, it's an all-black neighborhood that they grow up in. It's run down. The streets are segregated. The school that Michael Brown graduated from lost its accreditation. I mean, so this is where they're facing. They're facing poor schools. They're facing police brutality. They're facing racial profiling. So the interesting thing is, when people are telling them, you should be grateful about Martin Luther King Jr. or Ella Baker or Fannie Lou Hamer or any of these civil rights luminaries, they are really, really puzzled and confounded by that. Or you should be proud about Barack Obama. Yeah, they're proud that there's a black president, but then they're further confused of how there could be a black president and they could live and exist in the society and the state that they live in.
You think they feel like the civil rights leaders of the past didn't deliver on their promises?
Absolutely. They really do. Especially what's interesting here is we're talking about folks who are unemployed. We're talking about folks who've had run-ins with the criminal justice system, but they're still American citizens. They're still human beings, and that's the whole thing. It's very tough for even black elites to comprehend how do we help these folks without demonizing them, and are they part of the larger American family?
Is it possible that this is the next chapter of the black civil rights struggle in a way? So basically, you got the right to vote, to ride alongside whites in a bus, to use the same water fountain. But now we need to figure out, why do unarmed black men sometimes end up gunned down by white police? Is that somehow the next chapter?
Well, I think certainly mass incarceration, criminal justice reform is part of the next chapter. I think voting rights is part of this next chapter as well, as we've seen with the Shelby v. Holder decision, which really rolled back voting rights safety. So I think part of what we're seeing is that poverty, another war on poverty is part of this as well. So it's not enough to have sort of equality in law. It's got to be equality in fact. And the protests in Ferguson are about that gulf between the rhetoric of American democracy and its reality.
Peniel Joseph, is there anyone on your radar that you see emerging as a potential leader? I'm thinking maybe, Ta-Nehisi Coates, the writer for The Atlantic, who writes often about culture and politics and social issues. He's black. I also noticed last night on Twitter that one of the actors who's on Grey's Anatomy, Jesse Williams, has been very outspoken about Ferguson on Twitter. Do these people have potential to become real leaders?
Well, certainly they have the potential, and they are sort of public intellectuals and public figures. But leaders are folks who, political leaders and grassroots leaders are folks who are working full time every day. So somebody like Congressman John Lewis, when he was part of SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, was working with that every day. So part of what you need in Ferguson in the civil rights movement, and we have this, but they don't necessarily have play. They don't have celebrity. Are folks who are working in those communities every single day, trying to stop violence, trying to stop poverty, and trying to lead movements for educational and economic and racial justice. So I think that on one level, what's needed at the national level are definitely writers and organizers and intellectuals and figures who can have media traction, who understand what's going on in a place like Ferguson and understand, really, William Julius Wilson calls them the truly disadvantaged. When we think about, you know, poor black folks who are not getting education, who are living in hugely segregated societies, it might as well be 1950 in Ferguson in terms of how segregated it is. We used to call that Jim Crow. So what's interesting is that the leaders we're going to need are both leaders on the ground, grassroots leaders in every single community, and I think that's there. But at the national level, folks who can connect with what the politics of Ferguson are beyond just the traditional civil rights leadership and paradigm.
And how likely do you think it is, in your view, for this to come together anytime soon?
Well, I think it's coming together. I think social media has been brilliant in terms of Black Lives Matter and different hashtags and people. You know, the New York Times has done some great reporting. So has TheRoot.com, and I write for them. And people have delved into the politics of Ferguson to find out why is Ferguson both racially segregated, but predominantly Black. Yet white leadership is who rules the town, which is really. It echoes the 1960s.
Sure, a lot of analysis going on, but what about the likelihood that anything changes as a result of what's happening in Ferguson?
Well, yeah, the change is going to have to be in terms of bottom up. It's got to be through the people of Ferguson themselves. I mean, the 12% turnout in the last election won't do it. It's got to be grassroots, door-to-door organizing. Social media is going to play a part, but if you want to change things in Ferguson, get a different police chief, different mayor, different power structure, they're going to have to organize both a voter registration movement and they're going to have to organize a voter turnout movement and actually have a candidate, local candidate from Ferguson who can really deliver.
Peniel, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Stay with us. Coming up, with so much focus on electronic medical records and laptops and exam rooms, are doctors losing their human touch, literal human touch? Stay with us. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.